Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Angeles. Angeles is not a real name. She came to the U.S. from Mexico when she was 4 years old. She came with her parents and her older brother, and they settled in the Roaring Fork Valley, and for the last 18 years, the family has done what so many other immigrant families have done. Work hard, go to school, and hope that someday you'll get residency status. Now, that day came for Angeles about a year ago, about the same time she graduated from college. Other members of her family are still waiting. Angeles starts our interview remembering the challenges that she had adjusting to this new country.
We had traveled back and forth. My parents and my brother and I, we had tourist visas. So my parents would come and work for a few months, and then we would go back before the permit would expire. So I have memories of being in the valley since I was probably like 4 years old.
What kind of work did your parents do?
My dad, I think it's always been construction, and my mom just cleaning houses, like most immigrants, I think.
Where would they work? Where would you come to?
The first time we stayed in Basalt, we would stay with an aunt and uncle that were already here. And then we went back to Mexico, and sometime after, we got another permit to come, and we established ourselves in Carbondale, and then we just never left.
You were coming when you were smaller, when it was free flow, or the flow across the border wasn't as restricted.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we didn't have that experience of most people, like having to cross with a coyote or anything. Like I had my passport, I had my visa, like we had everything, so it wasn't a traumatic event like most people.
Do you have memories of the move when you first came when you were six?
Yeah, it was pretty traumatic for me because we had been moving around so much. I ended up missing school a lot. So I remember as a little kid just being really like isolated and just not wanting to talk to anyone because it almost felt like insecure, like I was going to leave anyway. So it felt very unstable. And when we came here, when I was 6 years old, it was a culture shock for sure. Because prior to that, I had never been enrolled in school. And this time they enrolled me in the second grade. And because I didn't speak a word of English, they held me back. And so they put me in the first grade. And it was just like, when I try to remember those first few months, it's literally like a dream, like where everything is hazy. Like you know, you're hearing all these like muffled sounds and voices and you can't make anything out of them. And where things almost seem like, you know, like my memories are blurry because, like, I couldn't understand anything that was going on, like, and I remember wanting to go home. Like, I remember crying and just wanting to go home.
So it was dreamlike, but more on the nightmare side in some ways, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That you couldn't understand, and people were talking at you in strange tongues, and it wasn't your home.
Yeah.
That must have been really unsettling. Did it last for a while? Was that something that followed you for a while?
It did. I got into survival mode immediately, you know, because you go from being understood and having people know what your needs are and being able to communicate what your needs are to not being able to express that. And not only that, like, not having the words. And, like, I remember I wrote about it a few years ago, and it was almost like I felt like a mime because I couldn't use my words to communicate. Like, I had to use my hands and different methods of communication because they didn't understand what I was saying. And unfortunately, during that time, like, it was even the kids that, you know, like, I had this false sense of, oh, that kid looks like me, so he'll probably understand what I'm saying. And, like, kids were really mean, you know, like, it just, like, I experienced the first time I ever experienced bullying because I didn't know how to speak, and it was just really hard to make friends. And
so the kids that knew English already would make fun of you because,
because
you couldn't.
I didn't know.
Wow. Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. Like I said, it was kind of like a survival. I was in survival mode because not only was I having to communicate for myself, like I had to communicate for my parents. And I was always put in the situation where, you know, my mom or my dad would be like, tell him this, this, and that. And I was like, I, you know, I don't know how to say that. Like, I don't even, like, I don't know what you're talking about. So almost having to be a guide for your own parents in territory that was unknown to you, like, that was, it was stressful. It was, like, it was, it caused a lot of anxiety. And for me, it made me feel very dumb, like, as a little kid, you know, where I don't know if the adults didn't realize that, you know, we didn't catch on, but, you know, we would always get pulled out of class for ESL, which, what is it, English?
As a second language.
Second language. And unfortunately, when ESL was going on, it was during math or science. So, yes, I was getting caught up on the language part, but I was losing the math and I was losing the science. So my goal was to learn English as fast as I could, to be able to perfect my accent as much as I could so that others didn't realize that I wasn't supposed to be here, that I didn't belong. And it just, I don't know, there was a lot of obstacles and a lot of insecurity in different subjects in school that I had to, like, overcome. And it was hard because it's like you're advancing on one thing and then you're getting left behind on something else, and not having control of that was difficult.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Angeles. Angeles is not her real name. She came to the United States from Mexico with her parents and her older brother when she was 4 years old. That was 18 years ago. Here she's talking about the challenges that an immigrant student faces in school.
I think it was my junior year of high school. I have this memory of, like, our English teacher getting really upset with most of the Latinos in the class because somebody from the office came in and gave out a bunch of slips for detention, and most of the slips were for Latinos because we had either skipped class or not gone to class, I mean, like, throughout the day. And somebody made a comment of, like, oh, you know, it's all the Mexican kids that get detention. And she was, like, visibly irritated, and she's like, yeah, why is that? I don't consider myself defiant or anything, but it was just one of those moments, I guess, where you just kind of get fed up that, like, you get called out on something that is not only happening to you, but to, you know, your community. She was like, well, aren't you guys interested in going to college or making something out of yourselves? And I just told her, like, most of us aren't going to go to college anyway. And that wasn't something that wasn't the right thing to say. But at that point where you get so many obstacles put in front of you throughout so many years, and you get to see all your schoolmates, you know, get the scholarship, get the college acceptance letters and stuff like that. And then I'm over here sitting with the rest of them thinking, like, I can't even apply to university without registering with Homeland Security. Like, that's just not happening for me, you know, and or like having the financial means to be able to afford even like CMC at that time, you know. And so it was a lot of insecurity just on like my self-worth, like how intelligent I was, how like you're literally trying to get out of a hole and it's almost like you're digging it even deeper. Like, how do you reverse that so that you build a ladder to climb up instead of sinking deeper? And
so how did you overcome stress like that? Because you were, you mentioned earlier that you were translating for your parents. Your parents were feeling like strangers in a strange land and looked to you to help decipher some of that. What was that like?
It made me feel angry at times, even though I didn't want to feel angry. Like, it did frustrate me because it was kind of like, no, like, it's supposed to be the other way. Like, you're supposed to be holding my hand, guiding me through this, making me feel better, not me making you feel better, you know? But I am very grateful for that because it made me mature a lot faster and appreciate things that most people would never even like imagine to appreciate because they didn't have to go through it.
Did you feel like you had to give up part of your childhood? I mean, it is an experience that most immigrant children who come with a different language have experienced. I've heard it from others.
Yeah, for
that
sure.
They become the bridge for their parents and the family.
Even just yesterday, I was telling my mom, you know, like, I think that at this point I'm doing you more harm than I am good translating for you, because every single time that I hear her speak English, I'm genuinely impressed, because half the things I didn't even think that she could, you know, just organize a sentence that way, and she can. And I was just telling her, you know, like, unless you immerse yourself in a culture where you are basically forced to be in that survival mode of, like, either I speak the language or I don't go to the bathroom or I don't eat, like, you won't get it as quickly because you're always going to be dependent on somebody else to translate for you or to say that thing for you. And it's going to be uncomfortable and it's going to be hard, but I was just letting her know, like, I had to go through all of that, you know, at a very, very young age where I also got frustrated. And, you know, I have memories of people that were unkind, like adults that were unkind, even when I was a child. Like, I remember, I don't know, I must have been like 10 years old or something like that, and going to the post office, and my mom, again, she was like, tell the lady that you need scissors. And I went up to her and I was like, hi, like, can I borrow some scissors? And she's like, I don't understand what you're saying. And I was like, scissors. And I even like motioned with my hand, like, you know, like the things that you cut with. And she was like, I don't understand what you're saying. And it was just that moment where it's like, I'm speaking your language, I'm motioning with my hand, like, I'm using every form of communication to let you know that I need something to cut with. And you're like, it was just kind of like that thing where even as a child you understand this person is not willing to cooperate, you know, and you need to back away. And there was many situations like that.
So you could tell that that person understood, but they were putting you through the degradation ceremony, the making you feel more.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because when you tell someone, like, even if, and that's one of the words that I feel most insecure about whenever I say it, but whenever you say, like, zizzers, even if you're pronouncing the word a little different, But then when you follow it up with the things that you cut with, I think that most people are like, oh, scissors, you know, like, yes.
So that's a trigger word for you.
Yeah.
That reminds you of somebody's not being very generous. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Angeles. Angeles isn't her real name, but she came from Mexico 18 years ago when she was 4 years old. She came with her mom and her dad and her older brother. Here she's talking about the challenges, particularly the messages that are sent to immigrant children. Children who've lived their whole lives in the United States but are still treated as if they're aliens.
At the beginning, when I was, I don't know, maybe like 12, 13 years old, I felt really angry. Like, I still didn't want to be here. Like, just because you get that constant reminder that, like, you're not supposed to be here, you don't belong, like, and I got it, like, repeatedly in, like, many different scenarios because, you know, being in catechism, I had a, and she wasn't even, she was a German catechism teacher, and she would not let us speak Spanish. She's like, you're in America, like, you speak English, like,
right.
I don't speak German anymore, I speak English. And it was kind of this thing where it's like, how can you just leave your culture like that, you know? And so it was like this, it's almost like the phases of grief, you know, where it's like, I felt really angry at first, and then I felt, you know, scared, and I wasn't like sure of how I was supposed to act. So I was trying to blend in as much as I possibly could. And I think that, like, the blending part lasted for several years of, it was such a compliment when somebody would say, like, oh, I can't even tell that Spanish is your first language, or that, like, oh, you don't even look Mexican, or, and it brings shame because it feels like a betrayal to yourself. Because for me, like, I was born in Mexico, you know, and I still remember so many things, and there were so many things that I held very dear to my heart that were Mexican, and like rejecting that because I wanted to be accepted felt like it was a clash of values. But I also didn't want to feel like I didn't have a home. And interestingly enough, last summer, I was able to go back to Mexico, and it was the craziest experience in years because it was another culture shock, like going back, you know, like, and like being with my cousin, and she was like, what are you wearing? And I was like, what do you mean? Like, this is my
mom. So you were immigrating again.
Yeah. And she's like, no, like, take that off. Like, you do not
wear
that.
You look foolish.
Yeah.
You're standing out in a way you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Huh.
And even like, even going back, and like, I had some of her friends tell me, like, you speak differently. Like, you speak Spanish, and it's good Spanish, but you speak a different Spanish. It's, like, very proper. There's not much slang in it. And so you start losing those things. So I'm over here thinking I'm going back home, yet I'm having to be reintroduced to my own culture because I don't fit in anymore. But it was a crazy experience. Going back to my hometown, because it was almost like having double vision, where I had the memory and the actual like vision that I was like of seeing everything, and having those two images clash. Because when I went into my grandma's house, I was like, yeah, this wall was green, like this wasn't here, like this tile floor was different, like this was a hall. And it was just all this flash of memories where I remember a lot more than I thought I did. But when I came back, like back to Colorado, that was the very first time where I was like, yeah, I'm a Colorado girl. Like, this is home. Like, Sopris became that symbol of this is home. Wherever I am in the valley, but this.
Oh, that was only a year ago.
Yeah.
That you really said, oh, this is who I am and this is where I belong.
Yeah. Huh. And I've been here for 18 years.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Angeles. Angeles recently got her papers, and that allowed her to return to Mexico for the first time in 18 years. During her visit, she went to a place she had dreamed about all her life.
When I was in Mexico last summer, I got to visit my old house, like the house that, I mean, it's still my parents' house, but it's abandoned, basically. And it was surreal walking in there because I almost expected things to be the same way that we had left them, and obviously they weren't. Like, things had been moved around, like, the couches weren't there, like, and everything was kind of stored up in one room, and the curtains that my mom had in the kitchen were still there, and I got to walk into my parents' room where all the stuff is now, and there was a little suitcase, and I just figured that maybe that suitcase belonged to one of my little cousins, and when I opened it, there was, like, a bunch of Barbies and, like, Barbie clothes and stuff like that, and it didn't seem familiar when I first looked at it, but I had this distant memory of my cousin and I getting the scraps of fabric from my aunt's. She had a uniform shop, and we grabbed the fabric and made uniforms for Barbies, and they were still there, and, like, when as soon as I saw that and held that in my hands, it was like going back to that little girl that kind of had to, like, pack up her dolls and leave everything because I didn't, like, I remember my mom was like, you can't take any toys. I brought with me, like, 2 to 3 changes of clothes. Like, it was a small bag. And the only thing I brought with me was, like, this audiobook of The Little Mermaid, and that was it, you know? So I guess growing up, I always had that idea that I would always go back and, you know, take my stuff back and everything. But when I was there, I was like, these aren't my things anymore. Like, and in a way, like, this isn't my house anymore. And, like, and I think that's why coming back here, I felt like this is home. Like, that used to be home, but this is home now. Except,
what were the emotions that you experienced there? I mean, when you walked into that house, when you opened up that suitcase with the Barbies, what emotions were you feeling?
It was a big loss. Because I had always daydreamed about it so much. And everything that I thought belonged to me didn't belong to me anymore. And, like, seeing the town and remembering everything, it was just, I was so grateful to go back because even though it felt so distant from me now, I'm glad I was brought up in such a loving environment, and just, I got to re-experience my culture all over again because I was staying with my aunt during that time because, well, basically my house was inhabitable, and I have, like, specific dietary guidelines, I guess you would call them, and my aunt really just, like, hooked it up, and it was kind of, like, re-experiencing that, like, Mexican hospitality of, like, you know, whatever you want, like, we'll get it for you, you know, and it was, like, every single day, it was having, like, a feast, and then she'd be like, you better cross the street and go over to your grandma's house because she's waiting for you for dinner, and I was like, I just had dinner, like, so it was a loss, but it was a big, big gain, and I'm glad I got to experience it, you know, whenever, before, like, when somebody would say, like, where are you from, And when I say, oh, I'm from Carbondale, I grew up in Carbondale, they're like, no, but where are you really from?
Where are you really from?
Yeah.
That
I'm
question.
Like, oh my God. And before, it kind of sent a shot of like adrenaline almost, because it was kind of like, oh my God, they're going to realize like where I'm from and I'm going to be in trouble. And now it's easier to answer. Like, I'm from Mexico. I was born in Mexico, and I feel proud to be Mexican, because I just got to see the good in the people of Mexico, and I got to see some beautiful places in Mexico. And again, like, that hospitality, like, just floors me, just how willing people are to serve and to make you feel at home.
That was Angeles. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. For more on immigrant stories, please go to our website, immigrantstories.net. Thanks for listening.